Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It was just a nice little pause, wasn't it? That was fun. Welcome to the Newtown Theatre. Please welcome a man who is worried that Al Murray might be the new Messiah. It's Richard Herring. So many of you, to this, it's a podcast recording, right? Some people get confused. We're recording a podcast, so it'll go out tonight, hopefully. It's Richard Herring's Leaving Second Trimester podcast. It's in a sort of metaphorical sense, so I am putting on some weight as well, which I'm hoping will disappear after Edinburgh. It's a long slog. This is the second week over. There's one more week to go. I've already booked a hotel in Carlisle for the drive home on the night of the last podcast. Just to try and pray. I've got to drive home with 2 young kids. Fucking hell, it's going to be a nightmare. But I was talking to Ned Ryerson on my walk here. Ned Ryerson is an insurance salesman. Every day's the same place. There's a bit of a puddle in the pavement by where he is. To be honest, he's getting on my nerves. I want to punch him in the face one of these days. But he calls it Rahalastapa. It's quite an obscure reference and very few people got it. Good, but... And on my walk here, most of my material, all my Edinburgh is walking here and walking home again and looking after kids. On my walk here, I passed a big poster of Al Murray, who's no longer on at the Edinburgh Fringe, but leaves his posters up to taunt the rest of us. And the one just coming down to Grassmarket, down from Greyfriars Bobby, down that little windy bit, it's got genuine blood coming out of his eyes. And either someone was just happened to be bleeding near to that post. Thought, oh, I know what I'll do. This will be a good use of this blood. I'll just put that, which will be quite, you know, unless it's someone else's blood. Or Al Murray is Jesus. It's one. It's, those are the only two options. I'm going to start worshipping just in case. A terrible sleep last night. Awful. So it's like a sleep deprivation experiment. This. It'll either make me brilliant or terrible, so fingers crossed, hey? Fingers crossed how it's going to go. The news, in the news, there's people ringing 999. I used to do a routine about this, people ringing 999 for bad reasons. You should only ring 999 for emergencies, and there's 101, isn't it? You can ring as well, something like that. You should only use for police business. Someone rang 999 to say, I bought a chicken yesterday, I just opened it and the smell is putrid. If I pay the petrol, will you send a car to help me take it back? They said no to that guy. Someone else had seen a dog with some missing fur. Rang 999. I reckon if you rang 101 with that, I think they'd give you short shrift. But there you go, that's what's going on in the news. I always like that when that comes up. I felt like there was something else I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, this is just boring stuff my daughter said. But I was trying to trick my daughter. She came home from the park just now, literally just before I came out, and there was two donuts in the fridge, and she's come back and she'd been promised a donut. I went, oh, sorry, I ate both the donuts. Which is believable, to be honest, I've eaten so much sugar. She went, no, you didn't. She said, and I said, I did. She said, if you eat two donuts, you'd be sick, so I know you haven't eaten the donuts. I said, I did, and then my mum got them out. I hadn't eaten them, and she said, and I said, see, I tricked you. And she said, I didn't trick for it, mate, she said, is what she said. I didn't trick for it, mate. Really aggressively. I didn't trick for it, mate. That's my new catchphrase, I've decided. So, my first guest today, thank you so much for coming along, everyone. I hope you'll enjoy. We've got two terrific guests. Only one of them's here, but she may be on for a long time. The other one is dropping off a baby somewhere. I mean, hopefully with another human being, not just off of the castle tenements. My first guest, no one could blame me at this stage of the fringe. My first guest today is probably best known for being the Bathgate Rotary Club Young Musician of the Year 2001. It's Fern Brady, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. She's one of yours.
I am.
She's one of yours. She's from Edinburgh.
Just Bathgate. Not Glasgow. No. Which everyone, I live in London and everyone thinks I'm from Glasgow.
It's just so aggressive. That's what it is.
But I'm 5'10" and I look healthy, so sorry.
Must be Edinburgh. So tell us all about the winning the Young Musician of the Year for the Bathgate Rotary Club. What do you play?
Piano, grade 6 to maybe grade 7.
Right.
I had a year off the fringe last year and I got a piano and started playing again.
Yeah.
But I did do a gig in Bathgate a couple of years ago where I bombed really hard. And I think it was because I decided to open by saying I was Bathgate Rotary Club's Young Musician of the Year. I was like, you probably recognise me from this. And then they hated me so much that I got taken out the back of the theatre.
Right.
And then there was a woman out the front outside going, she was shite! She was shite! It was horrible.
The genius is never recognised in their own hometown.
Oh, tell me about it.
That's like, look what happened to Jesus.
Yeah.
Technically in his own hometown. But it's the same basic thing. You've got a very remarkable teeth, if I may say so. I've said that very carefully, given the top you're wearing. You've got very remarkable teeth. It's on your poster.
Have I? Because I've just had braces and stuff, so
your
thanks.
Poster, I walk past your poster every day, and I just, because it's your teeth are so, you know, it's a large poster.
Well, I'd had them whitened for that, yeah.
I wondered if there'd been some airbrushing in there.
No, I'd had them whitened, okay. But not now, and I've not really been brushing my teeth this fringe either. So it's a bit, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, good. Good teeth. I'd go and see the show based on the teeth alone. They're very healthy teeth. If you go past that poster as much as I do.
I've spent a lot on them, so thanks.
Yeah, it's good. So tell us about the show. Is it a tooth-based show this year?
Well, no, I'm grimacing in my poster because women get told to smile all the time, so that's why I'm sort of grimacing into it. Also, I don't like having my photo taken, So I was trying to think how I could relax for the photos, because I always look quite constipated in poster photos. And then I had some like ecstasy in the house left over from my 30th. And I don't know why everyone that I've told this to acts like this is really odd, but to me it just seemed practical. I saw a picture of myself on ecstasy on my 30th, and I never like pictures of myself, and I thought, I look radiant. I look radiantly beautiful because I feel happy on ecstasy. Why don't I take that for my poster? And then I thought, oh, I won't tell my agent or the photographer because they'll be like basic bitches about it. So where we were doing the photo shoot, I went and took the drugs, and then I came back out, and within minutes, like, my eyes were like saucers, and they were like, whoa, these are great shots. And then I remember the makeup artist hugging me to leave, and I just was like, she feels so good. And then my agent went to hug me as well. I was like, don't touch me. I don't want to feel that way about you.
Brilliant. Well,
but I got good posters from it.
Yeah, you did. So. It's a very remarkable shot.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. I'm going to try that. I'm going to do heroin for my next year's poster. First, I'm going to have a first crack at it. As if I'm ever coming back here. What have I written down here? August. This is a tweet from August the 12th of yours. I can tell I'm having a good fringe because yesterday was the first time I nearly cried and told the audience I was going to kill myself after the show. Every other year it happens day three. Incredible progress. How are you feeling? You've got laryngitis, I know.
My voice went completely earlier this week, and I thought I was going to have to cancel the show, but you can't really do that. So I went to a private GP, which I've never done before because I'm not like posh or that. But that was the only way I could get like these steroids to get my voice back. So that cost a load of money. Then I went to the show, and I don't know why I thought the audience would be like, oh, thanks so much for doing that, Fred. I don't know why, and they were just ungrateful cunts. Can I say, like, I just looked at them like, I wish I'd cancelled.
It's weird when people who work like 8 or 9 hours a day, 10 hours a day, kind of resent people who work for 20 minutes to an hour, saying their life's tough. It's weird because they don't know how hard our lives are for.
Yeah, I never thought
but part of our job. They don't know. They don't have to be drunk the whole time. They don't know how hard it is.
That's a fair point. They were just like entertain us, jester. But So the day that I was telling the audience I was going to kill myself, the booker from Conan was in. So farewell, American Dream.
You have had, talking of America, you did one of your TV shows, you did a show called Radges, which was a BBC.
Oh, aye.
Was there some talk about going to America?
Snapchat are making it into a thing called Bad Kids in the San Fernando Valley.
Right, okay. So that's happening?
Apparently, wow. But those things take like ages to go through.
That's good.
What was the other thing I was going to see about crying? I had my lowest point of the fringe last night where I've only just started getting recognised for comedy. I think it happens a wee bit more during the fringe because of posters and stuff. So last night I just wanted to cry after the show, but I didn't want people to be like, oh, there's that comedian crying. So I just sat in a toilet in a pub and cried for about an hour. Because what happened, right, I'll tell you what happened to the show last night. There's loads of warnings on my show about scenes of sexual nature, scenes of violence, loads of swearing, all these warnings so that people don't come and get offended by accident. And I do pro-choice jokes and abortion jokes. They've largely been going well. Then last night, there was a pregnant woman in the audience who treated my abortion jokes as if I wanted to kill her baby there and then. And just sat looking at me, rubbing her belly. And it was horrible. Yeah. It was horrible.
She'll come back in a couple of years' time and go, now I want to kill it as well. I'm back. It's a lovely time when you're pregnant. You think it's going to be great. Especially if it's not you that's pregnant. That's the best. So you're rooted to comedy. I don't know if this has ever actually happened before. I mean, I know you were working as a journalist and you're working on Fest magazine or paper. I looked up to see if you ever reviewed me, and I don't think you have. So it would be great if you had.
The only two people I've given bad reviews to, I've since had awkward run-ins with.
And well, yeah, they remembered.
They remembered. Yeah.
Okay. Because I don't think I'd remember who reviewed me in Fest. No offense to Fest, but
I never reviewed you.
No, good. But you did the thing that every journalist, every Edinburgh, which a journalist decides to have, I'll have a little go at doing stand-up comedy to see what it's like. And the article is absolutely excellent compared to most of the articles that people did, because you had quite a good gig by the sounds of things.
Well, I wanted to be a stand-up for ages before that, so I was kind of hanging around comedy, but I was really shy before I did stand-up. So, and if you're a girl as well, like 10 years ago, if you said to people, oh, I want to do stand-up, like my family just treated it like they thought I was mentally ill any time I suggested it. Whereas you hear of, there's so many men in stand-up where their wives or girlfriends enter them into competitions and encourage them, and there's really none of that if you're a girl.
No.
So it was only because Fest kind of accidentally, it was just coincidence that they said, will you do this article where you try stand-up? Pushed me into it.
I quite like the articles you go to Matt Kirshen, the comedian, tell you what you're doing. You go, oh, not at this again. This happens every year, a journalist. But you mentioned that in the article, which I think is quite cool. But like nearly always, the journalists will fall foul of finding out how difficult it is. But you actually did well and decided to take it up. So that is, I reckon you might be the only person in the world that's ever happened to.
Yeah, I just did an interview with a Sun journalist that was like, oh, I'm actually going to try stand-up for an article next year. And he said it like it was the most original thing ever. And he said, because everyone in the office says I'm funny. And I was like, I said, Simon, that's not going to be the thing that gets you through stand-up. What you need is, ideally, a dead mother, a father that's always ignored you. Those are classic comedy ingredients. Yeah. Or a neurotic mother.
Yeah.
And then you need to have been an ugly child or bullied at school or strange in some way. That's going to be the thing that creates the narcissism that gets you through years and years of people booing you off stage in Essex.
Which of those did you have? You had a sort of troubled childhood. Is that
not trouble? I just had a moustache and glasses and stuff. I was really geeky and I wore like really unusual clothes, and everyone at school called me a hippie because my mum, like, we always like ate loads of unusual fruits, and eating fruit in Bathgate was quite weird. was a weirdo at school. I forgot about that. Yeah. I got put. That's in my show this year as well. Yeah, then when I was 16, I went mental and got put in a mental unit and had like a skinhead girlfriend. Okay. I can't believe I've forgotten about this because it's literally talking about it in my show every day. But to me, it's just like a normal part of, you know how it goes in your teens, you get put in a mental hospital.
But there's a great article as well. There's a great article, again, that you wrote for The Guardian about that. Good. It's worth looking up. We don't need to talk about it now if you don't want it, but it's, I mean, you can, but. You written a sitcom about that situation.
Raj's was.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Except the BBC mangled it and kept saying, oh, we can't make jokes about the mentally ill. And I was like, but I am the mentally ill. Like, if you ever been in a psych facility, it's hilarious. So they kept trying to change it so that it was about a unit for badly behaved kids. And that's what the American version is going to be. But I don't care anymore. I'll get money.
Right. I didn't see this show, but I saw a little clip of the trailer. You did a show called Brexit Stage Left, which was...
Oh, God.
So you were travelling around Europe to do gigs to Europeans. Is that what the gig was?
Yeah, my friend Jamali Maddox did a series for Vice that was about, it's called Hate Thy Neighbour, where he goes and meets different racists in America. And then Vice wanted him to make a thing about Brexit. So they sent me, him, Alfie Brown and Sean McLaughlin around Europe doing gigs. It was the best job ever because we were just like... getting filmed being on holiday, but they wanted us to talk about Brexit and also the... Oh, no, maybe I can't say that. Basically, like, the crew didn't... It wasn't very well planned, so they just would film us having dinner and then be like, guys, can you talk about Brexit? And we were like, none of us are economists or politicians, so we were just trying to think of stuff to say about Brexit.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't think it was a very good programme.
Good, you won't be asked back, it's fine. So that's it looked very interesting to me. The trailer made it look good.
Oh, yeah, the trailer was... If you just watched the trailer, it looked amazing.
Let's ask some emergency questions. Let's see how these goes. Well, I'm interested to find out, have you ever seen a ghost? I can't decide whether you...
Yes.
Have. Yes, okay. I should have realised.
I was in a council house in Bathgate.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why... Oh my God, my house in Catford in London is haunted.
Okay, and by what?
This is crazy. And the way I'll tell you this, you will believe it's a real ghost. So, I live in a part of London called Catford. It's really horrific. There's loads of, like, murders and stuff. Yeah. The first night I was living there, I could hear ghosty noises. And I told my boyfriend, and he was like... Because in horror films, there's always one person who knows that the ghost there is there, and then another person doesn't believe you. And I said, I can hear ghost noises. And he was like, it's 4 a.m. Do not wake me up about the ghost again. So I Googled her address, and it came up on Wikipedia that a trans prostitute was... Sorry, I'm making sure I word this correctly. A trans sex worker in the 70s was murdered... by a guy that wanted to hide that they were lovers. There's this whole famous thing.
Yeah.
And the ghost still haunts the house.
Right.
So I found that out by Googling my address after hearing ghost noises.
Okay.
And it's been in ghost books. So that's a real ghost, isn't it?
But you've only heard it making noises.
It taps at the window and stuff.
Okay. It's annoying, isn't it?
Yeah.
From the outside or the inside?
There's, we've got like a utility room, and it's not from the, it's a window, it couldn't be someone in the garden basically, it's like...
It could be that, or...
No, it's a window into my bedroom in the inside of the house, and the ghost is tapping at it.
Yeah.
Or it hits the walls as well.
Okay. And what about in Bathgate? There was one in Bathgate as well you had.
There was one in Bathgate.
Like
people always make out that ghosts are in... stately homes, but it makes more sense that the most wretched spirits would be in council houses in Bathgate. Yeah,
that's true. There's a lot of famous people come from Bathgate though.
Now there is, yeah.
After following you.
I don't know.
David Tennant.
I found out Lewis Capaldi went to my school.
Yeah, he did. You say that Susan Boyle went was from
Susan Boyle, Bathgate. Yeah, everyone, yep. Susan Boyle, Isla Fisher, that's married to Sacha Baron Cohen.
She's done well, hasn't she?
Yeah.
She got out young when she left.
Well, yeah. Anyone? Same with David Tennant. I didn't believe he was from Bathgate because he didn't have the face. Whereas, like, I feel really protective of Lewis Capaldi and Susan Boyle because people always go on about their faces, and I'm like, that's just how everyone looks. Like, that's how we look. It's not our fault.
Yeah.
You just look melted.
Yeah. That's fair enough. Well, like Susan Boyle, it was so ridiculous what happened to Susan Boyle. Like, the idea that someone who doesn't look like a singer could sing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane, right?
I feel really... I think the whole thing that happened where it's really tragic, because she's got Asperger's and can't cope with that sort of touring schedule, and then the press would just, like, make fun of her for... having meltdowns in airports and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, she still lives in the same house with her Donny Osmond bedspread and stuff. It's a wee shame.
Yeah, it's nice. And
sorry to bring down the tone there.
It's impossible to bring the tone of this podcast down any further. You've raised it, if anything. If you could take one item from any museum or art gallery in the world and take it home and keep it and it's yours... You're allowed one thing from any museum or art gallery. Is there something you would like to have?
Yeah, probably a stuffed tiger. To be as a centrepiece for my living room.
Yeah, you could probably buy that on eBay.
All right, enough, yeah. Yeah, probably that.
Still that stuffed tiger.
Yeah.
I'd quite like a dinosaur if we were going to go that down the natural history route. Quite like, the skeleton. I'm not expecting a real Jurassic Park thing going on.
I'll tell you what I would love.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. When they have preserved bodies of saints.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like that.
Like one of those.
Oh, I love that stuff. Or what's that village where every year they dig up their dead relatives and walk them around the town?
I don't know what village that is. Is that in Scotland? Is that in Scotland?
I'm telling you, this is real. It's somewhere in India or something. Basically, like, every year they dig up their dead grandparents, change their clothes,
okay,
have a chat with them, nice, and walk them around the town in a parade. It's so cool, you should look at
it. It does look, it's a bit like Coco for the Disney film.
Oh, I haven't seen that film.
They're actually dead people coming back from the other side. But yeah, that's well, interesting. I did not know about that. Let's go. If you had to choose between having a tit that dispenses talcum powder or a finger...
What?
A tit, a nipple or a breast that can... It's got unlimited talcum powder and you can have as much talcum powder as you want.
I never
make
used
a
talc-
face about my talcum powder tin.
Don't use
as
talcum
if it's
powder.
As if you've already decided. It's a thing you can put on your feet to dry them up a bit. Or on baby's bottom. You might need it if you have a baby.
Just
going
dry around yourself with a towel on the whole.
All right, well, maybe that doesn't sound so good. But when you
What's
the
other option?
A finger that can travel through time. But only your finger can travel. But it's still a tit connected to you, but your finger forwards or backwards in time.
But how will I know?
Because you can look through it there. It makes a hole. It'll make a...
Well, obviously the finger.
Yeah, no, obviously, yeah. It's an easy
did you
question.
Make that up?
Yeah, I didn't.
No. Did you pick those
I
two?
Did, I picked those two things.
Well, the second one's
yeah,
much better.
Yeah, everyone chooses that.
All right.
Unless people have really sweaty feet, in which they, in case they go for the talcum powder. You can market the talcum powder. You know,
I've been a lot more damp during the fringe.
Yeah.
Like, Edinburgh, you're just constantly clammy, because I'm not used to this weather anymore.
It's horrible here this year. So
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
The clam is...
I think this is the worst one since 2008 or 2009.
Okay.
Since she did the Hitler moustache.
Yeah, sure, could be that.
Yeah.
You're blaming my moustache for bringing, I don't know, for bringing good weather. So what would you do if you had a finger that could travel through time? Ooh, I haven't got too long left. Why am I wasting my time talking about this rubbish? If you could travel through time with your finger, what would you do with your finger? What would you change in the past or the future with just a finger? I'm interested to know.
There's just so much.
I'm glad you're thinking about it. It's hard.
The most obvious thing is I would go back and not... I would just sign up to do 2 weeks of the festival, but that's so obvious.
I mean, I don't know why we don't remember that when we do it. That's why, I would love to go home tonight.
Yeah.
I would love to go. No offence to the audiences who are coming, the sparse audiences who are coming for the last week.
I don't want to, like, if anyone hears this and you want to see my extra show at the Pleasance on the 22nd, I don't want to think I'm ungrateful, but I did start to email my agent last night and say, what will it take to pull the next week of shows? Because I can't do another one to these people anymore. Because I don't know what people want from me.
Yeah.
I don't know why some of them come to... I've had people come into the shows just because they went to school with me and it was like people that didn't like me at school.
Yeah.
Why do they come?
It's a recurring theme of all the comedians I talk to. They have a story about someone who bullied them at school getting in touch on Facebook going, hey, it's me, Janine. Remember, we had a great time. And they go, no, you were a horrible prick to me. But every single person has that story.
Yeah, someone who threatened to batter me at school was like... Oh, I saw you on telly. You look good now. How are you? Yeah. Your face looks panned in from a hard life in Bathgate. I still hate you. Awful.
Well, I'm sure you'll get through the week. And so you've got an extra show. You've sold out all your other shows apart from the extra show.
The whole run's sold out apart from... We put on an extra show in too big of a room at the Pleasance Grand. So there's like 300 tickets left for that.
Good. You'll sell those. What's the show called? And are you going to
Power and Chaos.
Cool. What, are you gonna tour it so everyone can see you?
Oh God,
team?
Yeah, I'm touring it. Pretty much as soon as I get home, I've got 3 days off. I'm going to Denmark to do it, and so I can have a little holiday in Denmark, and then I'll start the tour in Crawley. And then Milton Keynes.
Yeah. Yeah, that rings a bell. Those are good tour venues. You have a lovely time. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause. Fern Brady!
Thanks for coming. I'm hoping my other guest's here now. Thank you, Fern.
Ace! Oh. So, thank you very much. Just before we go into the second interview, I'll just issue a reminder that you all got a free program at the beginning of the show. I hope you enjoy that. It is a gift. If you feel like you'd like to give some money for that, and then you're under no obligation, at the end of the show, we'll have some buckets out, and we're making a collection for Scope, which is a fantastic charity that helps people with cerebral palsy. If you would like to give to that charity, either find someone with a bucket. There might be a bucket on my little desk that I have as you go out. If there is, if you can't find a bucket, you can give me the money, and I promise I will put it in the bucket for you. That is a guarantee. I am selling books and stickers as you go out, and I'm very happy to sign your programme and do selfies, all that jazz. You don't have to buy anything from me. You can just say hello and just give me a little cuddle. And no, don't. What am I talking about? I'm happily. I just saw your face and I just wanted a cuddle. That's just what I want. So, my second guest today. Oh, shit. No, it's all right. I've got one. I haven't written a. She's best known for. And so, I can just think off the top of my head and make one up from the last time she was on. So, my guest today is, you know, I've said it before, but she is still best known for her appearance on improvisation, my dear Mark Watson. That's why we're here today. And I saw Mark Watson jogging past me today on the meadows, and I nearly shouted. You know, he went one way, and then he realised that was the wrong way, and he nearly went another way. And I nearly said, "Did you improvise that, Mark, or was that planned?"
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I have to bring it back. I'm hoping she's there. Is she there? Okay, good. Will you please welcome Josie Long, ladies and gentlemen? She is there. She surprised me. Have a microphone.
Hi.
I was expecting you to come up there, and then you came out there. Like, that's where the ghosts are. I saw some ghosts back there.
Did you?
Yeah.
I was just playing with some prop babies.
Were you?
They're prop babies, and I was going to come out praying to you and being like, "It's my baby." But I thought you guys would take to it.
They'd have loved it. We were just joking about you throwing it off the top of the Edinburgh Castle, so you know, it would have been a great callback to something you missed.
That's a joy, isn't it?
It is.
How are you?
I'm all right. I haven't seen your fringe.
No, I've just been fucking about with a baby.
Yeah, me too. I've been fucking about with two babies.
Show off.
Yeah. One of them is more grown up now. They get more fun when they're a bit older, Josie.
My baby's already too fun.
Yeah. It's when they start speaking and saying stupid stuff.
Oh, it must be.
I was playing football with my daughter. Yes, she's very good.
Is she?
I think she might play football for England if such a concept exists in 10 years' time.
I hope that there's no such thing as England in 10 years. I hope that the whole thing is just Scotland. I'll be thrilled.
I'd take it. At the moment, I'll take it. So, how have you been? Your show's about giving birth to a human out of your uterus.
Don't spoil it. They don't know yet. Yeah, my show's kind of about... The way I would, like, pitch it to people is it's about how do you welcome someone to the world when everyone's telling you it's the end of the world, and how do you talk about things where people have historically been like, how can you talk about a woman's thing? But how can you be like, no, this is really, really interesting and massive. Come and join in. Please come to the extra show booked solely out of hubris. Yeah.
It's nice to have extra shows. I decided not to have any extra shows of this, just to keep the limited. And also, God, why do more? I'd do another one. So, have you found being a mum? Because this is—it's obviously a new thing. It's the baby.
It's new.
18 months old is the baby.
She's younger than that. She's like. I say on stage she's 13 months, but spoiler alert, she's actually 14 months. Okay. Just create a distance from the fictional baby and the real baby.
That's a tough time.
It is, it's quite brutal, because they're basically a baby, but they're like as energetic and as emotional as a toddler. But at least toddlers can sometimes be like, I don't want milk, I want a biscuit. Where she's just like, ah! And I'm like, do you want this? And in the end you're like giving her a key or a knife or something. You're like, just take it, it's fine, you're fine. But it's lovely. Like, it's been a real challenge because I'm just used to coming to the Fringe on my own and like spending a luxurious afternoon having a swim and a think about my work. And I've just spent, you know, I've been to so many soft plays in and around Edinburgh.
Which is the best soft play in Edinburgh? This is just for me.
Oh, guys, let's not be short-winded about this. Let's really go dive deep, because I feel that's what you're all here for. Now, we've been to the one on Restalrig Road, and it's lovely. It's run by a really nice guy who's got a lot of ambition for the place. But let's be real, it's too small. We've been to the Tumbles soft play in Portobello. Now, we all know Portobello's a great destination for a toddler. You've got the outdoor park, you've got the seaside, you've got ice creams, etc. She's too young for ice creams, but I'm painting a picture. swear to God, the Tumbles soft play, totally fine. Which one is the best one? Wonderworld in Leith. Thank you.
Okay. I think we went through that one last time we were here, yeah.
Did you? It's massive.
Yeah, it is very big, yeah. I feed my son ice cream. I think once you have a second one, you don't give
it. How
we were
old?
Really good with the first one, the second one. Yeah, I've got another.
How old is your little one?
He's now 22 months, so he's old enough to have ice cream now, but I gave him like a Twix or something on the plane. He was about 5 months old, my wife was furious.
Yeah, but it's a plane! A plane is just, we've got to do whatever we can to get through this. Well, I feel really bad because I try not to sort of give the baby the phone ever. I don't want the baby to like the phone because I hate the phone, but I'm obsessed with the phone. And I want her to just be like, I'm a little natural elf and I live in the woods and I don't even know what a television is, let alone a phone. But then if we're like on a long drive, she just despises cars so much because she's a very right on baby. So then I'm like, just watch this one video of Five Little Ducks for an hour.
I don't know how previous generations did parenting without iPads. Especially on a long journey up to Scotland. I don't know how they did it without.
I think they
an
just
iPad.
Played I Spy. That was
it. Yeah, that's what I remember. I just remember. Well, my parents used to. There was three of us, and they gave us a polo each, and whoever could make the polo last the longest won. We fucking bought. I bought into that so hard. It was a great fact.
What is the dynamics like between you and your siblings?
Well, they're older as well, so we're 5 and 6 years older than me.
Of course,
so,
you're the little one.
So I was in the middle. I was in the middle of being punched.
Oh, you were middle?
Yeah. No, I was in the middle of the car. I was the bottom. I was the middle.
And you were like, look, Mummy and Daddy, I've still got my polo.
My sister always won. She had the patience to see it through. I would always crutch it.
Was she the oldest?
No, middle. She's the middle.
She was desperate for the attention.
She was.
That's very
amazing.
Sweet.
I'll try it with my kids on the way back. Might kill the little one.
kept it for 2 hours. Yeah, it's in his throat.
I'm trying to find a way. I mean, if he dies, I'm going to be in such trouble because I've said so much on this podcast I want him to die. But if he does die, people are going
to... Do you not worry about in 20 years him listening to it and being like, oh, I can't wait to see what my late father would have said.
I was going to say the joke will be on him because I'll be dead. beat me to it. But yes, hopefully he'll have a good sense of humour. I made a tweet like something on the day when my daughter was born. I tweeted, "Oh, because I'd done a joke about children being sexual excrement."
I remember, yes.
And so I said, "Finally, we have some sexcrement." And then someone tweeted, said, "What if your daughter reads that tweet in 10 years' time, and how would she feel?" And I thought, well, A, I doubt she'll be scrolling back through 36,000 tweets to find out.
Be so tired.
And B, I hope I'll raise her to be the kind of person who has a sense of fucking humour, unlike your parents did.
Well, it's like when people seem to get so upset about double-barreled names, right? My daughter, we invented a surname for her, which my mum still cannot believe. She's like, "That's illegal!" I'm like, "Mum, it's not. We've done it. We've registered her at the town hall." "No, no, they wouldn't let you do that." "Mum, we've done it." But, like, everyone was freaking out about the potential that we might have a double-barreled name. Like, right. They just couldn't cope. And they were like, "But what if then she marries someone with a double-barreled name?" And I'm like, "Well, maybe within 20 years we might have refined our patriarchal naming system so it's a bit more fun and everyone can chill the fuck out. And if not, like, go to Spain where everyone has four surnames, have a lovely time, they have a sleep in the middle of the day. What the fuck is wrong with you?"
You'd love to be able to choose your favourite two as well, or two or three or one. You can have like four surnames.
People are fine.
Like, there'd be no one called Herring left if you had that choice today. If I had a choice, then I'd have foisted it on my kid.
Do you not love Herring now?
I do now, but it was a fun name. It was a tough journey.
How do you feel about people whose names are like Salmon? Salmon.
Yeah.
Yeah, like other fish friends.
Yeah, well, some of them are acceptable. Salmon is kind of acceptable. No one, if you do Salmon, people don't go, Salmon, but Herring. Herring
have you ever
fish,
met?
They do, don't they? I met Alex Salmond, but that doesn't count.
Have you ever met like any other fish names?
I must have done, mustn't I?
A fish comrade.
Well, what I think about Richard Herring is it sounds like a terrible comedy made up name. So when people say, "Is that your real name or is that your joke name?" Your stage name. Do you think I would really make up Dickie Herring as as my comedy? So I lose respect for the person asking me that.
Dickie.
I wouldn't make this up. I wouldn't be called. Well, I know what'd be funny in a fish. Let's talk about some other stuff that's been going on. We've talked about improvisation, my dear Mark Watson, before.
We've had a great time.
Talk to you about it again.
It is a crime that no one has resurrected that pilot. We had a good time.
Yeah, I'm still holding out hope, and I'm still holding out hope of Rahul Estapa that reunites the cast of that pilot, where you
really
all get
like
together
that.
And we'll just interview you all together about your memories.
It was nice.
That's one of my... I think I mentioned this, and I mentioned Justin Lee Collins, and, you know, that's the kind of thing he used to do, and
he
tweeted about it,
that.
And Justin Lee Collins got in touch within 25 seconds to say he would do it. I hadn't added him in, he'd just seen his name. But for the rest of the cast, that happened.
He wasn't on it.
Who was on it?
No, Justin Lee Collins.
No, but he does bring back Grainchill. Well,
oh.
He did bring back Grainchill and bring back the A-team. Something went wrong with Pucker Pads. And it's a great advert for Pucker Pads, though. Do you still write to a guy in prison who is a Black Panther activist?
Yeah, I still love him. To my shame, I haven't written to him for a while.
Okay.
Due to the fact that, you know, the baby gets in the way, don't do anything.
Yeah.
But I think of him often.
How did you get involved in writing to him?
Oh, so I was doing some stand-up on stage in about 2009 about the fact that I'd just been very ignorant about what the Black Panthers were, like my general impression of them that I'd got through, like, vaguely... hearing of them was like, "Oh yeah, I think they were very inspiring, but weren't they a bit violent? Weren't they a bit violent?" And then I watched a couple of documentaries about. There's an amazing one about Fred Hampton. Oh my god, I really recommend it. It's so upsetting, but it's like he's just the most incredible man, and obviously was kind of was murdered by the powers that be, and. You know, the more you find out about the Black Panthers and what they started out doing, like they started out doing the most, wonderful community activism. Like the first thing was a breakfast club and was becoming lollipop men because in their neighbourhoods nobody bothered building any traffic circulation. And like, oh my God, it was just the most wonderful movement of people that
genuinely made a difference in their community and were making these really important and righteous political points and speeches. And then it felt like they were galvanising something, and then obviously they were like sabotaged and abused and suppressed, and you know, like, so a lot of there's oh, my brain is so shit. There's three of them who aren't the guy I was writing to. Kenny Zulu Whitmore is another man who was also wrongfully imprisoned, and they just fitted them up and for murder charges that they obviously didn't commit. And some of them, like Kenny Zulu Whitmore, were in solitary for decades, for 30 years. And so, like, with things like that, that's like inhuman torture of brilliant, smart people who then have to spend their life just trying to keep their sanity. They're amazing, inspiring people. And I was doing this stand-up about how basically I found out about them when I was like, oh my God, I can't believe what a fool I was not to know more. And also just enjoying the way they speak, because the stand-up I had to do was watching a speech of Fred Hampton, and he comes up and he says, we say to pigs, daddy, I can't remember the next bit, daddy, you will not hold us down. And I was just like, wow, like, imagine opening your speech, we say to pigs, daddy. And I was like, oh my God, like, it was a different time in terms of like hip vernacular. Yeah. And anyway, this woman came up to me, this artist called Carrie Rickart, who's amazing. And she said to me, oh, I felt really overwhelmed when you were talking about the Black Panthers, because I've been writing to Kenny Zulu Whitmore. And so then I wrote to him, and he was just amazing. And also I was such a little twat, because I was like really exhausted, like having sort of had a bit of a political awakening in like 2010, 2011, and then feeling so devastated when the university reforms went through and there was all the kettling of students, and it's just such a shame, and it continues to be like awful and very bad for our society. And I wrote to him, was like, how do you keep going? And now I'm like, fucking dick, like, oh, excuse me, I'm just a bit upset and you're in prison, and how do you keep going? Anyway, he wrote this like wonderfully kind and generous letter back, talking about how you have to turn all your anger into positive action, and you can do it, and you got to keep going. And he's just a wonderful man, like, he's incredible. And friends of mine now write to him and still write to him often. And yeah, you should all write to him. His name's Kenny Zulu Whitmore. You can find his address. There's a Free Zulu website that's got his current address, because they move him around so that people can't find him. What's really embarrassing is, since I've had the baby, I've engaged so little with the outside world. He could have been released and I wouldn't know. But if he has been released, still write to him, because he deserves celebration and joy and gifts, and please send him things. He's a wonderful
man. All write to him. We'll have a lot of letters to write back. Let's give him a break.
Sod it, all write to him, and then he can snub who he chooses. This letter's dull!
You do lots of... recently you've been more political, but you've always had an element of social politics, I would say, in your work. But you did... tell me about the tour of... the tour you did without having any... The alternative reality tour.
Yeah. Oh, I've actually done a few of them. We did one in 2011, where we got this bus, and that's it. It was great. No. We got this van, and me and Tom Parry and my friend Grace Petrie and a few other people, we all went round, and we just decided we were going to kind of perform in places that people slag off and show up. And the reason we did it was, we wanted to see if it was possible to build a gig from scratch, arriving in a place, see what happened. But we also wanted an adventure, and we wanted to go back, because I felt like for a couple of years I've been doing activism, but it was all like protests and like, ugh. And I wanted to do something that was like, no, it's about joy and about trying to imagine a better world and have fun and trying to like reclaim shit privatised public space. And so we went around 2011 for about 10 days, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. We stayed with Simon Munnery, used to live in a stately home that he rented a wing of, and it had its own private river. So we all went and stayed there, and he was amazing, obviously, and we all swam in the river and we all swam in the sea. I mean, it was also an excuse for swimming for me, like, and then we did those and I loved it. Then we tried to do one a year later in 2012, and it was all wrong. It was like half the original people couldn't come, and the tour manager couldn't really do it. A lot of people came on who were like, this is great for my career. And I was like, no, it's not. Spoiler alert, it is ruinous. And then we did it again in 2015. And I have a friend who's a journalist and author called Michael Segalov. And it was how me and him kind of really galvanised our friendship. It was so fucking great. We did it together and just had a really lovely mix of people. And we went round to, the first one was in Trowbridge, round the back of a shopping centre, but it was also an alleyway that led to like a really intense muscle gym. It's like we'd be trying to do the gig, and it was mostly to like 13-year-olds, and then about once every 3 minutes, this like insanely muscular guy would like toddle past. We'd be like, hi, and we'd be like, hello. It was great.
You literally were just deciding on where you were going to play when you got there and then handing out.
And we would create the venue, so we would try and find things that were like natural or man-made amphitheatres. So like in Luton, we were right in the town centre, and loads of people come. We had between about like, the smallest crowd we'd have would be about 40, right, and the largest we'd have would be like 100, 150. And it would, the best thing about it was a proper mix of everyone in society, and it was the sort of people that my cardigan-based humour would not necessarily attract. And it, for me, I was like, without sounding too pretentious, like, I read a lot and I try and learn a lot about things like radical hospitality, where it's like, no, this is free and we want everyone to come, and we don't care if, you know, you're somebody who's a bit disruptive or a bit difficult, like, that's what we want. And it was about trying to sort of cater to lots of different people and also give something away for free. And we managed to get some funding. I can't remember from what. So basically every day we like bought 10 pizzas. And so a lot of time it would be 12-year-olds being like, when is the pizza coming? When is the pizza? And I'd be like, just a little bit more of my humour. But it was wonderful. I'd love to do it again. Like we went to Blythe, which is near Middlesbrough, but not Middlesbrough. And that was, there was like these amazing like 12-year-olds climbing over the top of this awning like while I was on stage. And like, I mean, it was fun and it was challenging and it was a weird thing to do. And then at the end of it, I made a show. And my dream was that we were going to document it and make a documentary and a stand-up show about it. But I am not a very marketable prospect. So we've got all the footage. I'm also not very on it with footage.
But you do so much footage stuff sort of off your own. I mean, you do things with through traditional broadcasters as well. But you do, you made films yourself.
I do it all myself a lot.
Yeah, so you are incredibly organised and also just get on with stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just sad when something you love that you have actually got doesn't quite come over the finish line, I think.
Yeah.
So with the film, we made a feature film, but it was, my collaborator is a guy called Douglas King, and like I wrote it and acted in it. He like produced it, directed it, edited it, found all the cast, found all the location. So it's like, if you look at the split, it's like, oh yes, I wrote it. And then it's like, this man like did 2 years worth of work on his own. But yeah, I mean, it's very much my project, propelled by me.
Because I didn't know, have you done that much acting before that? You've done a little bits and pieces, right?
Bits and bobs.
Yeah. So you're a main part in a feature film, basically.
Yeah.
And you're very good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's very nice. I would love to be employed, please, anyone. we did it partly because we've been making films together for about 8 years. And we loved doing it. And we were just desperate to make a feature. And we kind of mucked up and wasted some time with some people who just kind of wasted our time. And then the way that I am, like, and I think you must be, like, with stand-up, it's like, but if I want to write a show, I can just write it and do it.
Yeah.
So, like, when you're trying to seek funding for other things, you're like, guys, the idea is hot now. It's not going to be hot in 2 years. Come the fuck on. And so we just kind of met up at the start of 2016 and we're like, how can we make this happen? And we realised that we could kind of shoot for a week before and after summer. So we were like, okay, well, how can we kind of put that into the plot? And we were like, okay, if it's about like a mumblecore film about a woman before and after a relationship breaks up, and then we're a bit like, fuck it, we're going to put a military coup in the middle. And then we sort of plotted it in February 2016, and then we finished shooting the first half the day of the Brexit vote.
Nice.
And then we finished shooting the second half the day of the Trump vote. And with both of them, we were like, this isn't supposed to be a fucking documentary. What the fuck is this? And now we're like, we always like joke, because we're like, the next one we're going to be writing is about me and you winning millions of pounds and having a Caribbean holiday and all that stuff.
So I've known you for a long time.
True.
Like, now it's weird, because I still think of you as like a very new comedian, but it's 20 years since you won one of the Edinburgh competitions.
Yeah, won the BBC New Comedy Awards, beating David O'Doherty into second place.
Yeah. There's a rivalry between the two of you over this.
Well,
would say for him it's a rivalry because he won the worst competition and also obviously desperately coveted the BBC, whereas for me I just sailed through, won it. And I, you know that I'm like trying to egg this on and this isn't... like
20 years on.
Yeah.
And you're both very successful comedians. I don't know if you talked about this before, but I saw you talking about Bob Monkhouse at that... That seems bizarre that Bob Monkhouse was...
Oh, it was such a weird competition. Yeah. So the BBC New Comedy Awards now is a sort of Radio 4 thing, and I think they organise it really well, and it sort of really focuses on the new comedians. When I did it, for some reason, the year I did it, they upgraded it from, like, a show that was on BBC Two to, like, a BBC One primetime show. But the way they did it was to, like, showcase the comedian, the actual... What am I trying to say? So there was like a big competition final at George Square Theatre, right? 700 people. And each of us did a 7-minute set.
Yeah.
And there were like 7 of us. So that's 49 minutes of material, right? They could have then done maybe 10 minutes of interviews around that. Instead, they cut all of the comedians' bits on TV to 1.5 minutes and then just had loads of talking heads of famous comedians being like, "Don't be shit!" And then they booked the brand new heavies, who in 1999 were a big fucking deal, and they filmed them for like 40 minutes in the middle of the stand-up show and then didn't use any of the footage. Like, used like 10 seconds of it while they were like, the judges are deliberating while the brand new heavies are playing. But they never really played. They just kind of filmed them. Like, it was so fucking weird. And they had like a big panel of celebrity judges. So they had Peter Kay.
Wow, good.
Yeah, Peter Kay, who you all remember from the 90s. It must be fun if he becomes a nostalgic thing.
It would be good.
That's a snake eating its own tail. Someone would do comedy with like, who remembers Peter Kay?
It'd be best if it's him going, who remembers me?
And your mum would talk about me. And she would go to the shops and buy my video. Peter Kay, Richard Wilson.
Yeah.
From
I don't believe it.
Thank you. No, he was there.
I think I'm the same age as Richard Wilson was when he got the part in like, One Foot in the Grave.
That blows my mind.
I think I might be older than he was.
That's so bleak. Like, well, Richard, well done. You've got the part. You've officially got One Foot in the Grave. Fuck me.
Yeah, he might have.
Should have started it with like dangling a toe in the grave. Yeah. Or, at the very least, as it progressed, up to the knee in the grave.
I tell you, the tabloid writers are just waiting for that guy to die. They're going to be so happy when he's dead. 2 feet in the grave, that's where it's going to be. He's dead.
Oh, I don't like it. I don't like it.
They will. They'll be so happy.
I don't believe it.
There'll be a picture of his skeleton with just 2 feet.
Oh, I don't like it. Don't
blame me. Blame the tabloid writers. They're the ones who are going to do it. I'm just predicting it.
He's too beloved by me. So there was like a lot of celebrities on the panel.
I don't believe it. Victor Melch has 2 feet in the grave.
This is very sad.
It's awful, isn't it? Those bastards.
I don't wish to participate. And then Bob Monkhouse was presenting it, right? Yeah. And it was very weird as well because like it was sort of a strange collision of different worlds because he was kind of doing like, "Hello, it's me, Bob," you know, and then he was comparing us, but then obviously, like, me and David O'Doherty were there, and, like, I came on stage, and the first thing I think I would say was, "Hello, my name's Frank LaBeouf, and I play for Chelsea." And then I would just stand there, like, what a clever thing. I'm not Frank LaBeouf at all. And I had, like, a thing on my tummy that was like a piece of paper that I'd drawn a goat on and written "mother" underneath. And I say, "Guys, I know it's a bit wrong and I know it's a bit naughty, but I've got a new tattoo. Do you want to see it?" And then I'll be like, "It's not permanent." I mean, you can see why I won. And then there was a ready meal that I used to eat a lot called the Admiral's Pie. And it was like a box that said Admiral's Pie on it. And I used to have that hidden in the back of my trousers. And I used to go, "Guys, I'm sorry. I want a cruise. I want a place on a cruise. But I couldn't help myself. I'm a kleptomaniac. I stole the Admiral's Pie." Brought the house down. Absolute. Brought the house down. I mean, people were reeling in their seats.
but it was a really mad experience for me, yeah, because it was about my 15th gig. I was 17 years old. I was terrified. I was thrilled. I couldn't believe it. I was meeting celebrities. It was like wonderful. And we were staying for a week all together, all the finalists. And it was me and David and a guy from Wales who did a whole set about the Wombles, who was really alternative. There was a really nice guy who became an actor called Mark Strong. And there was another guy who I don't know what happened to him, but again, was so nice. There was a couple of guys from the north who were a lot more like slick, clubby guys. And we were all in this flat having a really great time. And like, oh my God, I'm suddenly staying in this cool flat in Marchmont and like going to delis or whatever. And I had French toast with bacon. Can you fucking imagine? And my boyfriend at the time was up. And then I remember, like, after I finished, he came backstage and, like, really kissed me really passionately. And I was like, oh, my God. And then I just never thought I would win, because obviously I didn't think I would win. I was, like, a kid. And I, backstage, I had loads of beers, because everyone else was a man. And I was like, oh, can I have a drink? And then because it was, like, 1999, even though I was 17, they brought a bucket of Bacardi Breezes. Oh, I was fucked. Bacardi Breezes and two reefs. Do you know what I mean? Oh my God, I was in heaven. I was fucked. And then Bob Monkhouse came out and he went, no, you can't be drunk. You might win. I was like, Bob, I'm not going to fucking win, mate. He's like, listen, in my dressing room, there is a basket of fruit. You must go in and eat all of the fruit. It's like me fucking wasted while the brand new heavies are coming and going. And then at the end, the footage is really sweet because I'm holding onto this sign that I stole from backstage. It says BBU. And then they announced who was second and third, and I was like, oh, well done. And then when they announced me, I was like... But then what's funny is I don't look around. I just, like, stride out like I bring forth my destiny. It was really fun. It was good.
And, now you're a veteran of comedy. Well, I was you're a veteran.
I was catapulted to overnight success.
You were, yeah. But, like, 20 years, that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
How fast that 20 years has gone.
Yeah. Blimey. When you think I'm only 19 now.
Yeah.
Yes, it's really odd. It's weird and it's wild to think how clear you can feel the scene has changed in some ways.
Yeah.
Like how wonderful it is that I truly believe that no woman comedian will ever be asked by a national newspaper, are women funny? Or, oh, there's not many women comedians. Like, that is gone. And yeah. I'm like, ah, oh, just 10, 15 years of that shit I had to endure. And that is a real thrill. But at the same time, like, the discourse is so much more, like, fragmented and difficult in new ways. You know, it's fascinating. And I really feel, like, thrilled that I've seen kind of, you know, what happens when you put your stall out and then people see your stall and are influenced by that and then so on, so on, and so on. And it develops and, you know, as an art form, it just gets richer and more exciting and better and better.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of blown away by the standard of comedy this year. It's just unbelievable, I think.
And you've not even seen my show.
I haven't seen your show. I've hardly seen any actual shows, but just researching people and seeing their stuff online, and it's just so much invention and so much talent. But it has to be now. There's so much competition, and you have to take it quite seriously.
It's terrifying.
I
love
just
it.
Turn up and dick around like I am. So you can't do that anymore. I used to be allowed to do this, and wouldn't be allowed. If you tried to do it in 2019, you wouldn't be allowed.
You've been banned, haven't you?
Yeah, because I'm a
they don't let you have a show in a 400-seater theatre anymore.
No one will come and see it.
No,
we've been stopped.
You've been silenced, Richard.
I've been absolutely silenced. I can't say the racist things I want to say anymore.
Jesus Christ! Bye.
That racism is bad. Apart from against white people, which is still bad.
I got a lot. It's not bad actually. It's good. I got a lot of abuse 3 years ago. 2 years ago, I made this video that was like, I'm more frightened of white supremacist terrorism than I am of Islamic terrorism because Islamic terrorism isn't being mainstreamed and it's not being fed to young people and it's not being subtly kind of pushed on young people. And I got more abuse than I've ever got in my life for it because lots of, I don't know how they describe themselves, classical liberal far-right YouTubers, like picked up on it. And at the time I found it really, really overwhelming and I sort of had to like hide. And now I'm like sad that it's so... effective because I'm like, I wish at the time I'd been like, no, fuck you, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. Because like, I just, it makes me so sad that it's like, who cares? I'm talking about it's like, we don't all know. I'm talking about it in such a dumb way. But like, the fact that it's on the fringes of the comedy scene and that people seek to defend that and seek to kind of enable that, I'm like, it's so boring.
Well, unfortunately,
boring's the wrong word.
Time is a matter. For the first time ever, a man has flashed a light at me.
He's just trying to silence
actually,
me.
Silence me with your red light. I won't be silenced.
Sorry, the only reason I brought that up is because I had so many people telling me that I was a racist against white men.
Oh, right.
And I found it so hilarious because I was like, but that's not a thing. Like, stop. It's not a thing.
It is now, thanks to me and Donald Trump and Adolf Hitler. We finally won. And on that bombshell, where's your show on, your extra show?
So I'm doing a show in this very venue at 10:30 p.m. on next Saturday. So if you just hide under the stage for a week, you can come for free. But please come because, please, God, please.
Please give a massive round of applause to the amazing Jodie Long, ladies and gentlemen. You have been listening to The Hullister Bar at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and The Stand. And everyone at GoFasterStrike.com. The producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz at GoFasterStrike.com production. Go to rehullister.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStrike.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.